Hey, Nico.
Hey, how's it going? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, man. So are you selling out for power? I mean, what's happening? Or is this just, is it the happenstance of the right approach and pitches in a spot you can pull them?
Yeah, just a combination of things. I do feel like it's a product of some things I'm working on and not random, but definitely not like going into at bats or homers like, you know, this is really the week, you know, this, we're gonna let it eat this week. It's more so like just clean contact, like we've said, moving pretty simple, seeing the ball well, and Houston always helps too.
That's cool that you do think it's the product of some things you're working on, because that's not always the case in baseball. Tell us more about that.
No, it's not. And it's not so much like, you know, working on specific things to hit home runs, but obviously you want to hit as many balls hard on a line in the air as you can. And that's kind of what it all comes down to for the most part. So swinging at good pitches and hitting balls hard on a line and elevating some to the pull side when the contact point lets you, and going from there. So yeah, it's amazing when those things line up.
Which one was your favorite of your many prodigious bombs? You realize, by the way, that as of yesterday, over the previous 7 days, you were number one in baseball, tied with 3 home runs over the course of the week. You were right there with Otani, Riley Green, Spencer Steer,
Cal Raleigh,
who hit a ball in one night. Yeah, it's like you were right there with the very best. So which
just how we drew it up.
Yeah, yep. which one was your favorite?
I mean, the one in Houston on Saturday to give us the lead felt really good, just from a standpoint of had the lead and then they take it, and you know, the night before it didn't go great, so to instantly respond and, you know, Bushy have a nice swing to left and then follow it up right away, that felt amazing. And then that entire inning turned into a you know, I think it was a 7-run inning and gave us a big lead, and always feels good to be in the middle of a really a winning moment like that.
You've been pretty honest with us about how all of this feels, but and you know, I don't know if you would consider us friends, but we'd like to think so. We wanted to make sure that we were pinpointing that you were doing all of the other stuff that helps the team win, and your team had been winning. When we talked with Craig Counsell last week, he was saying that even if you hit one, like getting off the zero is a big deal. So for you, how much of a relief was it to get off of zero?
Yeah, I mean, it felt great. I think the obviously aware of it, and it's not like the first thing on my mind when I'm getting to the ballpark, but you know, you get halfway through a season, it's kind of, you're aware of it for sure. And no, it's not the main thing that is at the heart of my skill set for helping our team win, but I think I said in a different interview, but it is hard to impact games in the big leagues without really driving the ball. And so you want that to at least be in your back pocket and be a part of your game, whether it's 10 homers a year or 30 or whatever it is. It is a big part of winning games, as you guys know.
Yeah, it is. And it's also like, it kind of adds to the public profile for whatever reason. Like we are on the stump for Nico Hoerner, National League All-Star, you know, like we're hardcore on the stump out here, and a few homers help, right? It probably helps in that regard. You're aware of that.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you want to be an all around player and impact the game in every way, and it's a big part of it.
Yeah. You know, Popeye has his spinach. You, of course, have your Rinaldi's pizza.
That's right.
Right. So Rinaldi's is figuring your efforts over there to make the pizza and eat the pizza has a lot to do with the power. Can you confirm?
Yes. Yes. The slugging percentage since pizza release, it's got to be just through the roof, directly correlated, all the above. So.
I think so. If I remember, Danny Parkins hit a lot more homers after his pizza release as well.
The science.
I don't think that's true.
No, it might not be true. Astros are good, aren't they?
Wait a minute. Wait.
What?
Wait.
I was segueing to real baseball.
No, but there's a whole other thing. That's what I was trying to tell you. There's a whole other thing. You brought up the pizza, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's another thing.
Yeah. Look, Nico, we talked to Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic, who's a delightful guy. You know Sahadev, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So I asked him about your signature pizza, which is now out and available. It's a spicy pepperoni, hot honey, light cheese, made a little crispy, and pineapple. Where are you on the Nico pie?
He had me until the end there. I don't know about that pineapple. And frankly, like, I can't eat all that spice when it's 95 degrees out. I sweat already when I eat spice. 95 degrees out, I'm going to be dripping. That generally sounds good. The pineapple, I'm not a pineapple guy. Maybe wow. Say, give me the Nico, no pineapple.
Man, so, yeah. I mean, you want to have words with Sahadev when you see him in the clubhouse later on?
I mean, it sounds like kind of like his problem. I don't know.
the hilarious part of it, Nico.
They got other good pizzas there. He'll be okay.
That's right. He can find something that he wants. But what made us laugh is that Sahadev then went into talking about his traditional Indian family where he would eat spicy food all the time, and he's like, I just can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of the first thing I thought of. I feel like that's the whole thing in India, right? Is you have heat, but you all outside, but you also maintain it with the spice, and it doesn't stop when it gets hot there. So why would it stop here?
Yeah, no, it's true. But I think he gets to define his own culinary intake as an adult.
We all do.
He gets to reframe that.
We're not force feeding pizza around here. It's okay.
is there something you ate in your childhood in the Bay as instructed by your parents that you no longer eat because you just don't have to anymore?
No, I had a pretty good food relationship growing up. A lot of burritos, a lot of tacos, and that's still a staple. So yeah, feel good about that.
Yeah, because that was the other thing that happened to us on this show last week when we had Craig Council on. He doesn't like tater tots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. It's a very agreeable food. I feel like you don't have to seek out tater tots to really enjoy them. It's just a good thing to have around.
Yeah, leave it to your manager to have a controversial relationship with tater tots.
Nico, I was taken aback by that because it's not like he was dead serious about it too. And then he explained like that my mom fed us tater tots all the time and I hated it.
Deeply rooted thing.
Yes.
I see.
So now you know. So don't offer him tater tots the next time you guys are out on the road.
No go. Stay away.
All right, now I'll ask you about the Astros. They were supposed to be like a third place team, but they're better than that, aren't they? That was probably a pretty fun atmosphere to see Tucker and Presley going back and have you know, a high energy series down there.
Yeah, they did the tribute video really well, kind of tied it together with the two of them in some nice ways, and you could feel just like pretty genuine appreciation and warmth for those guys and all the joy they created there. So cool to see them receive well. They both played well. They're really good at home, especially their home road splits. I noticed are really, really strong. And I'm not sure quite what to put a finger on that, but haven't played there a lot. And it's definitely a good atmosphere. But the Sunday game, especially, they pitched really well. And then obviously hit for power early on. So team that can do some of everything for sure.
You know, Kyle Tucker is a pretty restrained dude. Maybe you've seen more all year long, but I felt like we fans and media got a chance to see a little more, see some humanity and some emotion out of him over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, we get to see it more on a daily basis in the locker room and stuff. And, but you know, guys choose to express themselves in different ways with media or on the field. And so you kind of get a different glimpse. Yeah, I think you got a glimpse of just like it's always cool to see guys like videos of when they were just called up to and like basically looking like a kid and clean shaven, and doesn't seem like that long ago, but you realize how much he's done in the big league since then and everything he did there, and it's cool he got the acknowledgement that he deserves. Yeah,
Nico Hoerner spending some time with us here on the Speed Going Home show. That ballpark down there has always been quirky, whether it's the flagpole or the hill that they used to have.
Yeah.
Now the quirk is the sunlight. For the batter, dealing with the sun kind of going through like a church almost with stained glass, did you experience any of that while you were up to the dish? And did any of your teammates have to deal with that?
Yeah, I think it's a little worse for lefties because the glare kind of comes in from the left side of the field. So when you're in the lefty batter's box, it's kind of more in your face. The biggest thing visual wise for me is if the pitcher and the batter's eye are in the same color light. So for the most part, that was fine there. I think in the summer, anytime you have a 6 o'clock start, like the first hour, hour and a half of games is usually a little iffy, Wrigley included. Like, you just get some funky light, but it wasn't too bad. But it's definitely a weird visual on this, on the TV. Kind of similar to Milwaukee, some of those kind of afternoon games when you get the light coming through the windows and weird patterns across the field. It's definitely a little funky.
Did you feel any anxiety around the team after the first two losses in St. Louis? That's a really good bounce back to come out of there with a split after those first two.
Yeah, it feels like a long time ago now, but the yeah, I thought that was a real response by the group. You know, no team meeting or rah-rah, whatever, but just kind of a unspoken understanding of just bringing it for those next 2 days, and no different in preparation or effort from guys, but I do feel like everyone just kind of attacked those last 2 days in a really admirable way, and obviously we got amazing pitching. But yeah, that last day game there, you play a four-game series, it's really hot, the day game, it's kind of a easy day to come out flat, and I thought it was cool how everyone just brought it, and we played really well those last 2 days.
Baseball players notoriously don't worry because the season's so long. There's always time to kind of, you know, like get back into it. When, what is a point when, as a player, as a group, you do maybe go, I don't, things are not quite right with us? Because look, every team is going to go through a bad, you know, losing 12 out of 18 or something like that. But what are the things that you guys look for and go, no, this is bigger than the win-loss record. There's something actually right or wrong with what's going on with us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to be constantly self-assessing, not necessarily worrying, but like being really comfortable isn't really a great thing, I don't think, as a as an athlete or a group. And there's a difference between being confident and being comfortable. I don't think this group's ever gotten comfortable, even when we've been at our best. So I think there's always more. And so constantly evaluating, just like our staff and front offices, to make us a better team, but players themselves too, whether it's individually or as a group, I think we're constantly looking for ways to improve. And sometimes that gets heightened in stretches when you're not winning as much, but and that's where it takes good leadership to know when you actually address things that can be addressed or just let it ride out. I think that's the important part of setting standards at the beginning of the year, though, which is what counts as done great. And then it's not something new when you ask people to do this, this, and this, because it's what's been asked from the start of the year. And so oftentimes it's just reminders of core values and things like that that go a long way.
We talked to Craig Counsell last week. Right, it was the day after Pete had just had the moment where he forgot how many outs there were in center field. And Counts said he didn't talk to him that night. He just kind of texted him the next morning, make sure he was okay. Did any of you guys talk to him? Do you need to? Or is that something that he knew what was up?
Yeah, I mean, I think he had he understood what's happening there. I think it's like if that happens to a player that's, you know, showing up late, isn't taking care of their body, like doesn't do the behind the scenes work, just kind of going through the motions in general, I think it looks a lot worse. And that's when it's like a reflection of other things, but that's not who Pete is. Pete is on top of his stuff every day and wants to win as much as anybody. And so, but he is a human being. And yeah, I don't think, definitely not something that needs to be reprimanded or anything.
Matthew Boyd will go for you guys tonight. And since we're handing out all-star nominations, I think that he is worthy. I don't know if he'll be added, but I think that what he's done in the first half of the season is definitely all-star worthy. What's it like playing behind him?
It's fun. I mean, he's a guy who prepares and attacks the game with a lot of purpose. I think we talked about this before, but something really interesting about him is he did his whole elbow rehab on his own. Like, he wasn't affiliated with the team through that process, which is pretty unique. And it takes a lot of discipline, but I think he also created a lot of confidence for himself out of it by doing it all by himself and figuring out his own resources and attacking things on his own, to where he just created this whole system and self-belief through doing that process on his own that I think he's really entered a great career, but entered a really special part of his career coming out of that surgery into the second half last year with Cleveland and now with us. He's in a good, really good place.
Yeah, that's a level of adulthood and self-discipline.
Yeah,
right,
man.
There. That's impressive stuff. Nico, yeah. I had a friend who took his son to the Nico Horner Youth Baseball Camp yesterday and had a great time over there at Kerrywood Field at over at 3400 North Rockwell. How'd it go? How was that yesterday to run the camp?
It was good. The wind was blowing out. Wiffle balls were getting launched. It was good. I didn't have a – last year I got smoked in the face pretty good, so we had a little L-screen for me this year, which felt silly. But after the mishap last year, I felt pretty good about it. Yeah, the kids were swinging it. A lot of good energy. A lot of TikTok phrases I didn't understand, and it was fun.
When it comes to working with kids about this game that's not just your love but your profession – what's the message that you try to get across to them and to the parents that bring them there?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard because sometimes they'll be like, when did you know like you could be a major leaguer? Or like, it's like, well, I was probably like 3 years younger than you, actually. So if you don't have it figured out, like maybe get on top of it. No. it's usually like, just that you're never gonna know what baseball is gonna turn into, but just how many cool people I've gotten to meet through baseball and through sports, and whether I stopped playing after high school or not, like just like the early years of baseball, I felt like were so huge for me, and learning how to like be a part of a group of people and like handle emotions and all that stuff, you know, that sports that we love about sports that I think can be great, and it's not just baseball, but more so things along those lines.
Man, that's an awesome message, though, for a guy who has made the bigs and has succeeded. The fact that what you took away from it is the lessons of it early. So that's beautiful. But that said, yeah, how old were you when you knew, like, I think I can do this? How old were you?
I was probably like 10 or 11.
And you had a hunch. Did you know a position, or were you just like?
I think no, not at all. I think just like once I started traveling around like the country for travel ball stuff, and just like saw what else was out there, I kind of just, you know, knew it was a lot of things had to go right, but that it was possible. Just like these are the other, you know, humans that are trying to do this, so I can do this.
I mean, that's pretty interesting to hear. Like for parents out there, like. That probably gave you confidence in all sorts of ways. Like, oh, I'm good enough to hang with this. I'm probably good enough to do other stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just like as a kid, just knowing that those things are possible, and it's not, you're not entitled to them at all, but just that it's, that there's that opportunity out there, whether it's, something within school or sports or whatever it is, that, and that working hard towards something can make that possible. I think that's a pretty exciting thing to just kind of have on your mind as a kid, but not have it be an expectation. Like I was never told that I was supposed to do that. And that's what was cool, I think.
Who was the best youth player that you played against that then made it to the pros? And here's why I bring it up. For me, it was Cliff Floyd.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
When did you guys overlap?
We overlapped in high school. We came through the same Little League organization, Jackie Robinson West.
Yeah.
But when Cliff was a senior, I was a sophomore, and I was decent, Nico, decent. And
remember that one June? That's when your power really came.
Usually June is when it would happen. But I remember seeing Cliff my sophomore year, and this was back when aluminum bats were aluminum bats.
Oh, my God.
And seeing Cliff, and I was like, oh, my God, there's a different level to this.
Yeah, that one-hand finish bat drop was probably crazy with the Easton Magic or whatever you guys were swinging.
Yeah, the old Easton Black Magic, absolutely right. Yeah. And Cliff, I've told Cliff this story because he obviously doesn't remember me because I was a baby when this was happening, and I wasn't really playing. I was just in uniform.
You said 3/8, right?
Our place was the first place in Illinois that had lights. And so Cliff said that when he came to our ballpark, that all he was thinking about was hitting the lights.
Like the natural.
Yeah. And the thing is that he hit a home run that's still going. Yes. So it was terrifying. So who was that player for you?
There's kind of a variety of them, but Lucan Baker, who's with the Cardinals, he's been up and down with them. big power hitter. He was about the same size when he was 12, and he was throwing, you know, close to like mid-80s and hitting the ball 400 feet on 200-foot fields, and it was a joke. So he's a great guy, and we played on Team USA together, actually with Kyle Tucker. But he stood out as a man among boys, definitely.
Wow.
That's outstanding.
I didn't know you were on Team USA with Kyle Tucker. That's crazy.
Yeah, him and Nick Madrigal and a couple other big leaguers, but that was a 15U too at Team USA.
Oh, man. That's fun as hell. Do you know Tucker was going to be good then? Did he have good strike zone management at 15?
That's before I even really thought that walks were important. But same guy as far as the swing and kind of the unique movements in the box and all that. I remember that for sure. That's kind of what I remember most. Pretty lefty swing, and yeah.
All right, Nico, you're the goods, man. Thanks for the time, dude. We'll talk to you next week. Keep it rolling. See you at the ballpark this weekend.
All right, guys. Talk soon.